KALW.
Well, I'm getting pretty old.
San Francisco's first female sheriff is retiring in January.
I like talking to the people in jail. I learn a lot from them, to be honest with you. I learn a lot from the deputies that work there as well.
Sheriff Vicki Hennessy joins us to reflect on the moments that shaped her career working in the city's jails. Then we'll spend a day on the street with a professional canvasser.
This job is as much about self-preservation as anything else, like feeling good about yourself as a human being, despite a lot of rejection.
This is Cross Currents. I'm your host, Hena Baba. The results of the San Francisco sheriff's race are in, and because only one person ran for the job, Chief Deputy Paul Miyamoto wins the race. Vicki Hennessy will retire in January after 44 years with the department. Before Hennessy was elected in 2015, the department was rocked by scandals. Two inmates had escaped, and deputies were accused of forcing inmates to take part in gladiator-style fights. Hennessy ran to bring stability and trust back to the office. As sheriff, she introduced policies to make conditions safer for transgender inmates. She wiped out costs people had to pay for electronic monitoring, and she made phone calls free for people behind bars. KALW Justice reporter Holly J. McDeed sat down with the outgoing sheriff to reflect on her somewhat accidental career in law enforcement.
Did you know that you wanted to go into law enforcement?
Actually, no, but I have to say, looking at my background, I was an avid reader of Nancy Drew books, loved the Avengers on TV, watched a lot of procedurals on television. But at that time, I was looking for something that was just not as traditional for women. And a friend of mine told me it was that the San Francisco Sheriff's Department was recruiting. I had no idea, and I'm from San Francisco, that San Francisco even had a Sheriff's Department. So I looked into it, saw that the salary was a little higher, that they were recruiting men and women equally for the equal jobs, and I thought, hey, this might be interesting.
And that was a time where they were actively recruiting women, people of color, and LGBTQ people as well. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. I came in off of the list that recruited those people. So I came in with a lot of people from varying backgrounds, and I've added that as a complete plus to my life in this department.
And I read that at the time, so this was 1975, you didn't have much training going into it.
They told me to come to work, wear a white blouse, navy blue pants. I went to work on Christmas Eve of 1975 at the women's jail in San Bruno, and they just said, here's the keys, okay, this is what you do.
And was it hard being a woman in the department at the time? Did you think about it?
I don't think of it as being hard, but I think it was interesting, certainly, because we were expecting a group of people who had been had a culture established that were being kind of challenged now by having women enter those ranks and work in those areas. It took a while before women started working in the men's jails, for instance. I think I was one of the first to work in the men's jail, not just a woman's jail. But I also found that if I did my job and there were very good mentors, both among men and women in the department, that it wasn't a huge problem.
Yeah, and then flash forward to 2012 when you were appointed interim sheriff. That was at a time where the previous sheriff, Ross Mercurimi, had been charged with domestic violence, is when you stepped in, and then you decided to run.
I didn't expect to run. Towards the time where there were many more difficulties facing the department and facing the sheriff at the time, I did get a lot of phone calls and a lot of interest in asking me to run. And I thought, yes, I'd like to do this because I do care about this department. And so I felt that I could bring some stability back to the department and keep the course going. And I think that's what I've done.
What were some of the immediate actions you thought were necessary to take?
Well, one of the immediate actions I took was working with the jail staff on making sure that they were doing their rounds effectively and as prescribed by our policies, especially during the midnight hours and swing shift hours. I wanted to see if I could eliminate suicides. So far, we have not had a suicide in my term.
I want to talk a little bit more about some of those reforms here in the jails. You recently implemented a policy involving transgender and gender nonconforming inmates. What made you want to do that?
Well, in 2017, I did that, and that was one of my campaign promises. And then we started allowing people to express where they felt they would be housed safely. It doesn't mean they get housed there, but it does mean they get an option to let us know how they feel about it. And we try to make it happen if we can. There's a lot of challenges, and the challenges come in the form of architecture of our jails because we don't have a lot of options, and that's why we also wanted that new jail, because that new jail would have given us a lot of more culturally appropriate options for people.
One of your big goals was to move the inmates out of the Hall of Justice, where it is seismically unsafe. When I visited the jail, it was at a time where feces were flooding through the jail. So that was one of your big goals. And you recently spoke at a supervisor's hearing saying it was one of your failures to not be able to do that.
There has never, you know, I've been in the department a long time. There has never been any appetite to build a jail. Even when we were overcrowded back in the late 80s and early 90s, and we had we had 400 or 500 people sleeping on floors around the jails, and we ended up sending them out of county because we had a consent decree for 14 years because we were overcrowded. There's some kind of disconnect between political people in our city who say, hey, you know, they yell at the police at one hearing for not arresting enough people for auto burglaries, and then with the second breath, they don't want to build a new jail. And I'm wondering, well, how do you expect the sheriff, who's responsible for the operation of the jail, to provide humane, thoughtful conditions for people who are being held here when you don't give that sheriff the resources that he or she may need?
Looking back at your, is it about 40 years in law enforcement, what do you feel are some of the biggest takeaways for you that you've learned about what it's like to work in a jail and run jails in this city?
Well, first of all, I think that, and I tell the deputies this when I talk to them when they first come in, I think everybody knows somebody who's in jail. They have a friend, a relative, they know somebody who's in jail. Every person in jail has a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, an aunt, an uncle. People are people. You're not here to hurt people. You're not here to punish people. You're here to help people be safe. I can't tell you how many times people get out of jail and I see them on the street, or they see my deputies on the street, and they tell them how jail saved their lives. Should we have mental health outside before somebody gets in jail? Absolutely. You know, that should happen. But we know that people with serious mental health issues don't necessarily volunteer to get treated. And I know that from personal experience in my family. And sometimes people end up having to go to jail, and maybe that will be where they start on the track back.
That was outgoing Sheriff Vicki Hennessy speaking with KELW Justice reporter Holly J. McDeed. When Hennessy leaves office next year, she plans to go on vacation, spend time with her family, and clean out her garage. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Hannah Baba. Yesterday, San Francisco residents went to the polls to vote. With 2020 just around the corner, a presidential election year is about to begin. And when we're in an election season, it can seem like everywhere you turn, there's a person on the sidewalk with a clipboard and a cause. Most of us spend just a few minutes with them, if we even stop at all. But what's it like to be the person doing the asking all day, every day? Reporters Casey Miner and Raja Shah tell us more in this episode of The Specialist.
How's it going, my fine friends?
talk to me about dismantling racism with feminist hip hop.
Nope.
Okay. Cool. Hello, amazing humans. Let's talk about fighting racism with feminist hip hop.
That's today.
60 seconds.
Sorry.
Come back later. I'm here all day. This job is as much about self-preservation as anything else, like feeling good about yourself as a human being, despite a lot of rejection.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist.
Come fight racism with me.
I met Joanna Holden on a San Francisco street corner. She spotted my tote bag and yelled, "Hey, K-A-L-W.
Bring it in, sister."
Now, I do not talk to sidewalk canvassers.
60 seconds for local activism.
But Joanna was charming.
Come fight racism with me. I'm great.
I've been thinking about people like her a lot, actually. Like, who are they? How can they do this thankless job? So I said, "Hey, you know what? I don't have a minute for your cause, but do you have a minute for my podcast?" So I got her email address and sent a text message. Canvasser spotted.
It was my own personal bat signal.
This is Raja Shah, fellow reporter and street canvasser obsessive.
I wouldn't say I'm obsessed with canvassers. I think it's more like fascinated. Not just with who they are, but with what they represent.
Say more.
Well, each of us, whether we're aware of it or not, we spend lots of emotional energy putting people into categories. Friend, family, coworker, stranger, someone who's like you or someone who's different. But a street canvasser, someone like Joanna, where do you put her? You've never met her before, but she wants to get right up close to you.
Ooh. Want to fight racism with me, sister?
She wants your time, your enthusiasm, and of course, your money. You have to decide on the spot, what are you going to give her?
Isn't it such an interesting, like, look at humanity?
It is, and that's why I wanted to spend a day watching her work.
So we're off?
We're off. Joanna's day starts at 10:15 a.m. She'll split it into four quarters, and by 5 o'clock, she needs to make $185, which covers her salary and the organization's programs.
This is a really solid corner. I've worked here many a time.
We're in an upscale neighborhood in San Francisco. $8 milkshakes, artisanal cheese shop, that kind of thing.
Hey, sister, come fight racism with me.
The crowd around here is mostly white, mostly in their 30s and 40s. A lot of people are headed to work on the train that stops here every few minutes. You're going to hear that train a lot.
That sounds loud.
The train is not so good for my recording, but it can be great for Joanna's work, because every few minutes, another one arrives and releases a new wave of foot traffic, potential marks.
Hey there. Want to talk about hip-hop and social justice?
Joanna works for an organization called Hip Hop for Change, which is all about using music as a force for social justice. The money she's hoping to raise will go towards running workshops for kids from poor and marginalized backgrounds. And here's obstacle number one. The people she's asking for that money can't necessarily relate.
These neighborhoods are very idyllic, very pristine, very beautiful. So we kind of bring a slice of that reality to them. Hello, excellent human beings. Talk with me about fighting racism. 60 seconds.
Joanna's rooted in the middle of the sidewalk. The train pulls in, and as this blob of people approaches us, she starts picking out specific faces in the crowd.
Hello, fantastic humans with dogs. Let's use feminist hip-hop to fight racism. 60 seconds.
Some people politely decline.
Talk with me about ending racism.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Others walk by in total silence. This guy's on his cell phone.
Call them back. We're fighting racism.
This lady's pushing a stroller.
60 seconds. Babies are into it.
And then there's this guy.
Uh-oh. He was distracted and walked into a pole. Poor guy.
And then this guy.
Hi. Talk with me about fighting racism. 60 seconds.
I work in this neighborhood.
Oh, you've talked to us before?
No, I haven't.
Lucky day?
No. Mm-hmm. But just remember me, because in the future, I'm not a participator.
This guy, the non-participator, leaves a mark.
Well, he used the actual phrase, "I'm not a participator."
A few minutes later, Joanna's still thinking about him.
I'm not a participator. You are a participator.
It's one of the only times I see a no really get to her. Otherwise, she just shakes it off. She's relentlessly positive, rejection after rejection after rejection, because there's always the next guy, or the guy after that.
God, how could she even manage that? I mean, even just hearing her make her pitch over and over again makes me tired. I can't imagine doing it day after day without just getting bored.
Or cynical.
Hey, sister, come dismantle racism with a local activist. 60 seconds. Yeah. I'm Joanna. What's your name?
A lot of people don't last in this job. They work for big corporate canvassing organizations, sometimes just for a day or a week. But Hip Hop for Change is a smaller organization. And this is Joanna's full-time job. She gets paid $15 an hour, the organization has a healthcare plan, and she really cares about the cause.
I know it's a little awkward to stand out here and ask for money on the street, but I do it because it's important, because these issues personally affect me as like a trans woman, you know.
So Joanna's a transgender woman. She uses the pronoun she, and she wears dresses while she works, for a reason.
I definitely think about how I'm going to dress in a way that will make me feel comfortable with how I'm being read, because, yeah, you know.
So her gender is one reason she's really aware of how people respond to her. Her race is another. Unlike most of her coworkers, she's white. And she knows that they deal with comments and harassment that she'll never hear. That sense of injustice is what motivated her to apply to Hip Hop for Change in the first place, even though she knew she might not be a good fit.
I'm like, look, if you would rather hire a person who's actually from the Bay Area hip hop community, you should do that. But I really think my perspective would be important. And they were like, yeah, let's have you. We want you out there on the street talking about your experiences because they're worth it.
So part of what she's doing every day is putting herself totally out there. She's almost literally saying, look at me, talk to me, stop for me.
My coworkers hear things about me that people would never say to my face. I've heard time and time again, people walk past me and then they see my coworker across the street and they're like, is that a joke? Thumbing back towards where I am standing, something they would never say to my face, but they're eager to complain to my coworkers about having to see a trans woman in public. And I get similar remarks about my coworkers, but we look out for each other. Hey sister, talk to me about fighting racism with feminist hip hop. 60 seconds.
After a couple polite rejections and a bunch more blank stares, the blob yields an individual.
I'm Joanna, what's your name?
Hi, Bailey.
Hey, Bailey.
Hey.
So I work for Hip Hop for Change.
Joanna goes into her pitch, a one-minute explanation of Hip Hop for Change's programs.
We created an education program, the MC, that's taught over 1,500 kids self-love and self-expression through hip hop. So even a little trans girl can rap about liberation.
And then pops the question.
For funding, we do need all your damn money. I challenge you to do $50.
I can't do $50.
What can you do?
I'm also poor. Do you have information?
Oh, Bailey's trying to wiggle out of it.
We do have a website.
Okay.
But I love
And it. Joanna is prepared for situations just like this.
Say, for example, someone's like, this is an awesome program, but I can't donate. I'm totally broke. It's like, first you acknowledge, you're like, yeah, don't worry about it. Just do as generously as you can.
This is step one of what's called a response cycle.
So yeah, do as uncomfortably as you can. Where are you from?
Missouri originally.
So you know about some racial injustice?
Yeah, I do.
Step two, get them to say they care.
This is such an important issue and you want to leave the Bay Area a better place than how you found it.
Yeah, sure.
Step three.
Hit them with some really intense fact.
Power facts.
Something you may not know is that 30% of kids in Oakland have post-traumatic stress disorder.
Step four, come back to the ask.
So what's the most you can do? I know it's a little bit uncomfortable, but we're doing something no other organization is doing. Could you do $20?
Yeah, I can do $20.
Thank you.
Start to finish, 4.5 minutes.
This is so classic, like how to win friends and influence people.
Yeah, and it works. I ran after Bailey and asked her why she donated. She gave three reasons. She liked Joanna, she feels kind of bad for canvassers, and the personal connection really mattered.
Well, I mentioned that I was from Missouri, so there's, I think, quite a bit of institutional racism in Missouri. I'm always willing to help a cause like that.
This is a recurring theme. The people who donate tend to genuinely care, but they need a skilled nudge from Joanna.
Okay, so it all sounds really nice like this and everything, but I don't know. I just feel like there's a part of what's going on here that's hugely manipulative. Like, yes, of course I want to fight racism, but I'm also not going to stop for you. And yeah, now I feel kind of shitty about that, but I also really resent feeling cornered.
Yeah, and other people feel that way too, but Joanna feels like her work is more important than your awkwardness.
It is uncomfortable asking people for money on the street, yes, but it's also uncomfortable that people are getting killed by racist violence. And it's not, I'm not asking for this money for myself.
Hey, talk to me about fighting racism. 60 seconds.
Next time.
Okay.
Of the hundreds of people she calls out to on any given day, about 25 or 30 will stop to talk. And about half of those will donate. So hitting her quota is essentially a numbers game. She ends up raising $69 by 11:30, beating her first quarter goal. But she's still got a long way to go. And the next few hours do not go well, even though she's really trying.
Buongiorno.
We're dismantling racism using feminist hip hop. Before you feed your bodies, let me feed your soul. 1 minute.
60 segundos, señora. Hable conmigo sobre justicia social en la comunidad.
I can't help feeling like sorry for people. People seem to be in the midst of like such sadness a lot of the time. It's really bizarre to just like interact with so many people and realize that majority of them are like completely glazed over most of the time. They're out in public at least.
When it's slow like this, the work has the potential to be a real downer. So Joanna gives herself these little pep talks from time to time.
And I'm not like just a crazy person on the street, which is how people in their indifference can make you feel. Like it's nothing that I'm doing. It's a society that treats honest discourse as suspect. That's all.
Hey family, hi.
The pep talks help give her energy and it starts to pay off. At 3:15, she gets her big fish.
That guy did a monthly. Yeah, that guy who didn't want to get recorded did an $18 monthly.
Hip Hop for Change raises most of its budget this way, and Joanna's one of their top fundraisers. Today was a good day. She yelled out her pitch more than 200 times. I counted. 18 people gave her money, and she made her quota, $185 and then some. But she doesn't call it a day. She's a believer, and she keeps right on pitching.
Hey, talk to me about fighting racism.
Nope.
Okay.
Talk to me about fighting racism.
I am loving it.
So Raja, you spent 7 hours shadowing Joanna while she works. After all that, did you glean any insights into the human condition?
You know, at some point, I decided I had to find out what all those people who just walk right by her are thinking. And my plan was so simple. All I had to do was get people who had expressed zero interest in stopping to talk to Joanna to stop and talk to me.
I think I see where this is going.
Excuse me, I'm doing a story about street canvassers.
I don't know, I'm just walking for you.
Excuse me. I'm doing a story about street canvassers. Excuse me. I'm doing a story with public radio about street canvassers. All right, that didn't work. So what I found is that this job is really hard.
It was hard? You thought this was hard based on what you saw today? Today was an easy day, rookie.
That story was sound designed and mixed by Seth Samuel, who also wrote all the music you heard. You can hear more episodes of The Specialist at our website, kalw.org. Tune in tomorrow at 5. One of Mayor Breed's priorities is to get injection drug users off the streets and into treatment.
All the things that people said we couldn't do because of the law, we did them here in San Francisco.
Legalizing injection sites, tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And now let's end the show with some local music. This is Sugartown from Berkeley. They're playing at the Back Room in their hometown on Saturday night.
Driving on this roadway, so high up in the sky. Alcatraz in the distance, like a fortress for the damned. Somewhere down below me, the cold waters roll. Black ink in the sunset, the ragged depths below. And I'm waiting for the earthquake, waiting for the ground to break. Hoping this old bridge will take me down slow. take me down slow. It's my time to go.
The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Quinn, and Joshua Sirotiak. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
With his eyes upon my face, and I'm waiting for the earthquake, waiting for the ground to break, hoping this old bridge will take me down slow, take me down slow.